DW.
You're listening to DW's Worldlink with me, Neil King, and with me in our Bonn studio right now to give me his personal take on the legacy of the Russian Revolution is my colleague Mikhail Bushuyev from DW's Russian department. Mikhail, welcome to Worldlink.
Thank you.
Mikhail, 100 years since the Russian Revolution, a truly historic date that not only changed Russia, but had an impact on global politics and societies. And yet it seems to be ignored pretty much completely by Russia today. Why do you think that is?
Oh, funny. I mean, the silence that you hear in Russia nowadays is really embarrassing. It's like your anniversary of the 9/11 and nobody talks about it. The Russian authorities, they don't know how to tackle, how to talk on this. So that's why there's no national dialogue on what happened then, what went wrong. There's no talk on Russian state-run television whatsoever. But it has reasons because, you know, for the regime of Putin, the revolution hundreds of years ago was actually a bad thing. Because Putin doesn't like revolutions and sees them as a kind of threat to stability. He can also say, oh, it's good, because it led to the Soviet Union. And Soviet Union was a big deal with, I don't know, we won the Second World War and we sent a man into the outer sphere, you know, and outer space.
He served in the Soviet Union.
And he served as a KGB man in the Soviet Union, and Soviet Union was really great. So was it bad or was it good? Neither. So basically, it's a lose-lose situation.
As we just heard in the report at the top of the show, Mikhail, the 7th of November has even become a regular working day for Russians.
Right.
This wasn't always the case, was it?
Yeah.
You were born in Russia in 1980 and can recall both the Cold War period, well, at least the end of it, and the collapse of the Soviet Empire. Just how important was the Russian Revolution of 1917 in your upbringing?
Oh, it was. I mean, still a part of my memory still kind of misses it, because basically it was the most serious date for me as a boy. As for many, many others in Soviet Russia, the only other date or festivity which was greater, bigger, was the New Year's Eve. And that was pretty much it. And it was a nice, great, and a very, I don't know, it was important. And I still remember some little strophes and songs that we used to sing. And I was young pioneer, you know, with this nice red scarf. And I mean, it was a big deal for us as kids. And then as the Soviet Union collapsed, certainly it was interesting to talk about it. And what in the first years gave hope that we would do that. In the second part of the 90s, basically this energy fell down because people were so deprived and the readiness to talk on the revolution really fell down. And then with Putin era, basically come this ignorance and silence because it's so contradictory. Yeah, and Putin doesn't really have a position. And yeah.
So would you say, I mean, there's also now this film, Matilda, and
yeah.
It seems like this historic date has shifted completely in the Russian psyche. Would you say that the Tsar is more on vogue today?
Sure. Nowadays, this is really funny because you can see people in Russia demonstrating with, which is totally unthinkable in the Soviet times, with communist signs of Lenin and Stalin and Tsar and
together.
Christian Orthodox symbols, which is totally, you know, this is schizophrenic, right? So, but you can see people doing that. So the Tsar is in vogue, right?
But that would suggest it's more about the past, that they're sort of hungering for something that was bygone days. They're sort of mixing it up. They don't realize that they actually fought against each other, those two groups.
Exactly.
But it's about the
past.
It's
forgotten. It's forgotten. Yeah. Now they are kind of in this national psyche. They are kind of, you know, the conflict is over, and for Putin, the Tsar was kind of, you know, an ancien regime, you know, a big, nice, glamour, whatever, and stable.
Was he a role model then as well? Or is he a role model for Putin?
Not quite. And that's why the ambiguous, you know, position still prevails, because for Putin, it's a really, you know, shaky position. You cannot call it bad or good. Either the communist rebels or the Tsar. So he starts this, not talking about this discourse.
Keeping quiet on it, basically. So, I mean, it's been 100 years since the revolution. Russia has, of course, changed a lot since then. Putin's trying to keep a lid on it, and he doesn't want this revolutionary spirit coming back again. But do you think that spirit of 1917, which led to the toppling and the execution of the Tsar, do you think that spirit is still alive, or has it been extinguished by Vladimir Putin?
I think it's a big myth, basically. Also, very popular in the West, that there was a revolutionary spirit in 1917. It was pretty much a coup d'etat. It wasn't a revolution, a massive, you know, supported by many, many hundreds of thousands of people. It was basically that the left-wing radicals, we call them Bolsheviks, right, were so fervent and so greedy of power. And then they basically developed this myth, which is nice.
Myths can be dangerous, right?
Right, but it was kind of pretty. I mean, the myth itself was kind of pretty, you know, with this Aurora ship, which gave his first, you know, boof, mm-hmm. and then the revolution started, and they sterilized this as a, you know, supported by many kind of a struggle for more equality and fair and whatever, you know, equal rights and stuff. So nowadays it wasn't killed off by Putin. No, it was killed off much earlier in the 90s as the huge and deep crisis came with the collapse of the Soviet Union. And then the people turned into the post-revolution mode, you know, don't trust anybody. And stay away from the state, stay away from social institutions, rely on yourself, rely on your relatives. Maybe to some of them, rely on Christian Orthodox Church. But and they still live in this homo homini lupus, so in this man is as a wolf to man mode, nowadays.
Could that also be because, I mean, basically the 20th century, all the things that happened in Russia, starting with the revolution, the two world wars, the Soviet era, is there a kind of collective trauma of the Russians?
Oh, sure. I mean, this is a nation of post-traumatic stress depression. This is fact. I mean, this is what we kind of still fight with. So, sure.
So, how is it when you go back to Russia these days? Does it still feel like home to you?
Sure. I mean, I go back every year, and it doesn't feel really strange to me, or, you know, I don't feel alien there, no.
Okay, so Putin hasn't killed off your home feeling, homecoming feeling?
No, totally not. Though 2014 and 2015 were a tough 2 years, because it was a kind of rise of this pseudo-patriotic feelings. This was pretty crazy, because this is crazy enough when you start a conflict with your neighboring country, which is so close to you. Mm. Many millions of Ukrainians have Russian roots and vice versa. And I mean, Rostov-on-Don, where I come from, is not even 50 kilometers away from Ukraine. So this was a tough time, but it's kind of over now, because people are tired of the conflict.
Mikhail, I'd like to also talk a bit more about Putin, and also go a bit back to the beginnings of Putin's government. But I'd first like to play you a short soundbite.
Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, gerade eben sprach ich vor der Einheit der europäischen Kultur.
That's Russian President Vladimir Putin giving a landmark speech in the German parliament, the Bundestag, back in 2001. And it was historic because it was the first time a Russian head of state had spoken in the German Bundestag. And he even did it in German, which he'd picked up while stationed in the GDR by the KGB. But that's just by the by. Michal, do you remember that speech?
Oh, I do remember it quite well, yep.
And how did you feel about Putin back then? Were your feelings different to how they are now?
Sure. I mean, back then I just hoped that he will not be that bad. We all knew he's a KGB man. So I thought, okay, look, he can be like a European politician. Nice. I was a bit proud even, because I thought, well, a representative of your country speaks well, knows foreign languages, he is active, he's resolute. Maybe it won't be that bad, because it was pretty obvious that he would cut some of the liberties. Even then, my hope was then, I still remember it, he won't cut my personal liberties. He would just, you know, cut off a couple of independent TV channels, and that would be it. That was my hope then. But it turned different after that.
Putin's speech in the Bundestag wasn't just in German. It was also full of compliments and offers of partnership to the West. And back then, I remember this speech very
different
well as well.
Different times. Yeah, different times.
A significant number of Germans, they were quite euphoric about him. But others with longer memories, they weren't so sure whether this former KGB officer could be trusted. The situation is less ambiguous today with the Russian invasion of eastern Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea, etc. But do you think the bad relations between Russia and the West is solely due to Putin's actions? Or did the West maybe miss a window of opportunity when he started out as president in 2000?
Quite a question. I mean, the West pretty much did something wrong, but
What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it was a popular discussion a couple of years ago between right-wing Russian intellectuals about the West did need a kind of Marshall Plan for Russia in the 90s, when it was really completely broken and the industry was completely out of nowhere, you know. So the West did need to invest a lot more in Russia, or and had it invested, you know, and sort of this discourse. But it's too late.
Do you think the West maybe also made a mistake with NATO expansion and EU expansion at the speed at how that happened? That it sort of basically just steamrolled Russia with it?
Hard to say, sure. But I mean, I still don't understand why it was so important to take countries like, you know, besides of the Baltics, because this is strategic and this is interesting. But others that came, like, I mean, some Bulgaria or whatever, are they so important for NATO? I don't know. But the NATO people know best what was the strategy.
Because the EU was, of course, also wooing, and NATO
exactly.
were wooing Ukraine.
I mean, it went in inevitably into this conflict. So there's no other way. I mean, there's no other way with to find a compromise with Russia, because Russia sees this region as a kind of, you know, sphere of its interests, and Russia still thinks of it of itself as an empire, with Ukraine, Bulgaria, Baltics, and all the Eastern Europe being its kind of sphere of interest.
That was just a very short political excursion,
yeah.
Very interesting. But coming back to, you just mentioned the self-perception, how Russia perceives itself, and also that Putin is giving Russians back this, maybe also this pride, that Russian is, you know, becoming something, an important player again after the humiliation, after the fall of the Soviet Empire, which it suffered in the 90s.
Yeah, kind of Weimar syndrome, yeah. Yeah.
Coming back to the centenary then of Russia's 1917 revolution, which was marked this week.
Yeah.
What would you say is the biggest legacy that remains from that event, despite Putin's efforts to play it all down?
It's a big legacy untouched, I would say. It's like your treasure in the attic from your grandma or in the basement. it was a huge social experiment, or a mistake, or a tragedy. A mistake you can learn from. Not only Russians, but the whole world, because it was a big social, you know, terra incognita, right? With the whole socialist experiment. Now, you have to talk on that. You have to, you know, you have to start a national dialogue like the Germans started after the Second World War, and they pretty much profited from it. So the Russians need that as well. That would be very profitable for them. But I'm still glad, you know, I'm kind of glad that they don't start it now, because I don't trust the regime now or the public figures now to get it straight, to get it like sustainable, mm-hmm. to get an image of the past that is sustainable, that could be profitable. So I'd rather glad that they ignore it and silence it.
Okay, so it's the treasure in the attic that should be looked into sometime in the future, not now, in your opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Mikhail Bushuyev, thank you very much for joining us on DW's World Link. If you'd like to listen back to this interview with my Russian DW colleague, you can always go to the DW Media Center at dw.com, or even better, download the full show at dw.com/worldlink. Time for a short music break now, after which we'll be hearing from our regular World Link columnist, Tamsin Walker, who's been rubbing shoulders with Berlin's vibrant Russian community. Mikhail, how do you say stay tuned in Russian?
Go back to our regular broadcast. No, оставайтесь с нами.
You heard the man.
DW